In today's special, our guest is the charming Eva Yerankova, born in 1921 to a notable Prague family in the early years of the First Republic. As a junior, Yerankova skied competitively, and as a young woman she graced the covers of popular Czech magazines, something of a charmed life. But that all ended in September 1942 when her husband, Miloš Jeránek, was arrested by the Gestapo and spent the next years in concentration camps. Mrs. Yerankova, today a sprightly 90, recounted their story of hope and survival, first under the Nazis and later under the communists, which eventually saw them, like so many of their fellow compatriots, flee to the West. Her story, though, begins with happier days and sweet memories of childhood in Czechoslovakia.
We lived in Prague on the quay side opposite Žofín, very near Národní divadlo, which was fantastic. So as a children, we grew up and played on Žofín, or Slovanský ostrov. We went swimming there or ice skating in the winter, and it was wonderful. And that was our winter in Prague, and I went to a local school around the corner, and so was my brother, who was 4 years younger. Because he was a weak child, my father decided we have to be more, living more in the country, and he bought a house in Ževnice, in the woods. It was called copy of Kokořín Castle, which was called Villa Kokořín, and there we moved always in beginning of May and stayed there till the end of September. My mother stayed with us in Ževnice, but she was very weak and not very well all her life. And so we had a very big freedom, and we lived in the, played Indians in the woods, and I played volleyball and then later tennis. And my father started a tennis club in Ževnice, where later on Martina Navratilova started there. So I met Martina in Wimbledon later on, and we talked about Ževnice. And she also went 30 years later than me into the local school in Ževnice.
You were involved competitively in skiing, I've read. Who taught you to ski?
My father started the Lyžařský závodní klub, and I was 3 years old when we were taken. We always went to the same place in Krkonoše. It was called at the time Berngrundbaude, Medvědí Bouda, and there was a group of people, all friends of my father, who they always met there every time at Christmas time, Easter time, half term. We spent always in this Krkonoše. It is under, it's near Spindlerův Mlín. And it was wonderful. And so as children, I was 3 years old when I started skiing. And I knew Krkonoše, all the mountains, hills. My father took me all over, dragging me over when I was about 5 years, 6 years old, over the place. I used to go to junior skiing tournaments with a group of my friends. That was just before the war. Then we lost Krkonoše, and it was absolutely fantastic, and we had great fun. But of course, it was at that time, it was very primitive skiing. There were no ski lifts. We had to walk and walk everywhere with our skis and rucksack, and then we skied down. Even when before the war I went to Tatras, we walked 4 or 5 hours up to the mountains, and then we skied down. We had to carry our skis, we have to carry our rucksacks. Now it's much easier skiing also.
You graced the cover of magazines as a young woman.
My friends from when we were young One was Ladislav Sitensky, the great photographer, and also Honza Lukas. And as youngsters, we used to go, even at the beginning of the war, we didn't have cars, but we went cycling everywhere. So we spent weekends cycling in the countryside, and either Honza Lukas or Ladislav Sitensky, they took pictures of us, and then they published it in the newspapers. So I was in all covers on one on Ozvieni or Ahoy and Listpania Divek and whatever magazine there was. I was on a cover at that time. It was when I was 16, 17, 18 years old.
But you must have been chasing off suitors, I imagine.
Well, you know, it was no serious until I met my husband, really. Before, it was all fun and it was very nice.
How, in fact, did you meet your husband? He was a very dashing man, certainly, yes, from photographs.
Yeah. I met my husband when he came to visit my father, and he came to play bridge. And he saw me, and I was at the time somehow very miserable, and he asked me to come to the theater because his girlfriend... He had a girlfriend, very famous married lady, I don't want to name her, and she couldn't go to this Národní divadlo, so he said, come with me to Národní divadlo. So I said yes. I was late, I lost my gloves, I looked terrible, and it was in the afternoon theater. And afterwards he asked me again. He was at the time already a director of Topič Borový and Lidové Noviny, and he had a very nice flat in number 9 Národní, and he was, they were friends. Zdeněk Němeček was reading one of his new books, and he asked me to come to this party, and my parents said, no, you can't go, but you must have a guard. You can't go to this man because he's got a very bad reputation. He's got so many ladies around him, and you can't go. So I went with a friend, and then so we started to go together. When he asked me to marry him, I said, okay. But the Christmas came, and I had to go ski racing to Austria. It was already when we were occupied by Germany. He said, well, it was before Christmas. He said, you have to decide whether you choose me or ski. And I said, I go skiing, and left. And so we didn't see each other for about half a year. And then he said, well, please marry me again. So I said, okay. And then we arranged our wedding, and it was after Heydrich assassination soon. And unfortunately, we had our big wedding in the church in Svatý Vojtěch, which was very near where we lived. And at midnight, we came home to my husband's flat. And on our wedding night, about 3 o'clock in the morning, Gestapo came. 3 men arrested my husband, and I've seen him. He was away for until the end of the war. He was in different concentration camps.
What was the main reason why your husband was targeted?
His uncle was Dr. Stransky. After his arrest, he was put to Svatobořic as a prominent. There was Otakar Španěl, Lala Kubelik, prominent people. It was still after Heydrich that was so many people were persecuted. But they were put into Svatobořice, which was near Kyiv in Moravia. But it was not a concentration. It was, they called it, Internierungslager, run by the Czech guard, really. And I was allowed once to go there and visit him. I just opened the radio and heard, because of Stransky's speeches from BBC, my husband was told he's being transferred from Svatobořice into a concentration camp. So he was sent to Gross Rosen in Poland. It was a camp very near Breslau. It was a bad camp, but it was not Vernichtungs... extermination. It was not extermination. First, I didn't hear from him for a long time. I got some letter. I always try to send letters on time, and I could send some food parcels, and so I did it all on time. So he survived, and at the end he worked a year in a factory there. Prisoner, they were walked into the Krupp factory, which was transferred from Essen to Poland, because the planes at the time couldn't bomb Poland because it was too far. So all the Krupp factories were transferred to Poland, and he was working making guns. And he said they were trying to sabotage as much as they could.
It's mind-boggling to contemplate first the incident where they took your husband away on your wedding night on top of everything. And afterwards to try to support him any way you could. Yeah. Where did you find the strength?
It was very difficult at that time because it was very difficult to get some food. So we had to cycle to the countryside and try to get some food from the some whatever we could get in the country. But of course, being caught, it meant you could go to prison or be executed. So the same was like listening to Churchill's speeches. If you were caught, you could be put to prison. One of my very good friends was executed just like this. One of them, which was also with me, a friend in Best Kedy, which was in the book with Sitensky, who was executed like a student at the time. It was a terrible terror, but we were young, and you know, when you are young, you don't think of things being dangerous. You just do things and don't think about it.
And when did you see him again?
First, just before Christmas 1944, I decided to get into the camp. I had with me about 400 cigarettes and bottle of brandy, and I demanded to see the commandant of the camp, which I managed to get in, and I gave him this bottle of brandy and the cigarettes on the table and said, I would like to see my husband. I don't know whether he's alive. And this commandant, it was obviously... nearing end of the war, the Russians were already on the... We could hear Russian guns, and the Americans were flying over. You see the planes, American planes. So I asked him, can I see my husband, and put the cigarettes and brandy in front of him? And he said, yes, and called my husband so I could see him about 15 minutes and talk to him so I knew he's alive. That was a great thing. But then very soon afterwards, after Christmas, the whole camp was evacuated, and my husband walked from Gross Rosen, which is from near Breslau, which is Wrocław now. They walked the prisoners in the terribly cold winter and snow from there, and he ended in... They had to walk 2 months, sleeping rough, hardly eating anything. They were only few arrived, because when you couldn't walk, you were shot. And he arrived first to Dachau, and in Dachau there was typhoid, so they said no, they were not accepted, and he ended in Flossenbürg, which was there where the Schuschnigg, the premier from Austria, was held as well. So he met Schuschnigg at the camp, and he was liberated by the American army at the time in April, not knowing whether I am alive at that time, because I was in Prague, and he didn't know what's the last... Since Christmas, we didn't know what is happening to me or to him at all.
Did your husband talk a lot about his experience?
Well, we very rarely talked about our he didn't want to speak very much about his experience in the camp. But the one thing he was sure afterwards, each year, about the same time, it was soon after Christmas, he was very depressed for a month or sometimes 6 weeks, sometimes 2 months. And when once I asked him, why is it always the same time? And he said it was when he was in the concentration camp, they put him in front of about 7 or 8 men in one row. They were Armia Krajowa, Polish officers, and 2 Russian officers, and they were executed all in front of him. And he was standing there and expecting being executed, of course, as well. And they let him stand there for about 12 hours, and they said, now you can go. And I think that was probably one of the reasons that he always comes after Christmas, he got this depression, because I think it's probably this must have come back to him, this horrible thing. My husband said they really survived only because a lot of people gave up because they lost contact with their relations or with families and so on. And I really tried very hard to write each time I could. I was allowed once a month to write a letter and or to send a parcel, so I always tried very hard to keep up with this. And of course, how is it survived walking from Poland to Bavaria, I don't know, but I can't understand that the guards, it was end of the war, the guards, they went with them all the way, not that they didn't escape and didn't give up and didn't let them go, which is just beyond my understanding. They walked all the way with them, obviously.
It's absurd.
It's absolutely unbelievable, is it?
The period after Bohemia and Moravia was liberated again and the country was liberated, were those positive years up until 48? Were those positive years between 45 and 48? Did you think that Czechoslovakia would have a chance again?
Absolutely. It was so fantastic. We all, the 3 years after the war, from our liberation until the 1948, we had such a wonderful life and such a great hopes, and everything was developing wonderfully. And I could have been, it was the happiest 3 years of my life. My daughter was born, and we have been celebrating each year our liberation on always in the 9th of May, and we were dancing in the streets, and it was absolutely great time and great hopes, but it lasted only 3 years, and not even 3 years. Then came 28th of February, and my husband was sacked from the papers by the communists who took over, and they were the strange thing. They were all our friends in the newspapers. It was Drda and Rezac and all these people and all the poets and everyone, and suddenly they turned back and became communist, and we decided after my husband having been 3 years in concentration camp, we had enough of camps, and we decided to leave.
It was certainly, it seemed like an extremely dark period, and I'm always struck by, for example, I've met Americans who were firm believers in socialism.
Yeah.
And they moved here in the darkest period. And I cannot understand it.
For me, when I was already in France, in Paris, because when we escaped, we got to Paris. And I was there when I heard about Milada Horáková, and that was, for me personally, it was the greatest shock, what people can do to each other, that they can execute a woman who was a different political party, that she, it was unbelievable.
When you began a new life, eventually you made it to Great Britain, because you also had ties there. How did you feel about that new start? Because I read that you didn't have much money, and you didn't speak the language. You spoke 4 languages, but not English.
Yeah, that's right. It was, I must say, when we lived in Paris almost 3 years, We were very, very poor, very quite hungry. But Paris, after the war, was fascinating place. And for a few cents, centimes, you could sit the whole afternoon in a café de flore and watch people go by. Or we walked everywhere. I had so many friends were in the same situation as we were. Three of us in a small room in the cheapest possible student hotel, which was very cold, only cold water. Toilet was at the end of a long corridor for everyone. And I just think, when I think of it now, I said, how could we not complain? But it was the feeling of freedom that we are free suddenly. And we had quite a few friends in the same situation. Now, with all the luxury we live, and you've got hot water and central heating and mobiles and everything, we had practically nothing.
In Great Britain, you eventually began a new life and a new career working in fashion.
Well, at first, one has to have luck in life, and we were very lucky that my husband went for interview and suddenly got a job in the Foreign Office, British Foreign Office, because there was a Cold War at the time, and my husband spoke all the languages and was a journalist, and they wanted to know what's happening and behind the Iron Curtain. And he worked 25 years in the Foreign Office, and it was a wonderful job for him. And then after 10 years, because I had a small baby, I couldn't work before, I got a job as a fashion buyer for Liberty's, which was something so fantastic I could never dream of. And I never had any experience. I never worked in my life. And when I went for the interview, which was arranged by a friend of mine, because I said I haven't got courage to try for an interview, she did it for me. And I met Mr. Stuart Liberty and his managing director. And I told them I have no experience, but I like fashion. I lived in Paris. I speak the languages. And it was at a time when King's Road and Merrick One started, and they wanted to change the old-fashioned Liberty's shop, though it was a luxury shop, into something a little bit modern. So I got the job on my face, and it was wonderful, and I stayed there 15 years. And I was traveling all the world. I was in America, I went to Switzerland, I went four times to Paris, which was great. I was living in the grand hotels and having all the luxury after being so poor in Paris. It was just what everything I could dream. I was at the first show when Christian Dior and Yves Saint Laurent parted, and I was four times in 1 year. I was in Paris always for a week. Then I was always in Rome, in Florence, and then in Zurich as well, buying sportswear in Zurich. So I was escaping to the mountains. So right.
During his career at the Foreign Office, or your time in England, when you would hear about what was going on in Czechoslovakia, Did you believe that totalitarianism here would end?
Not really, because we, as being in the Foreign Office, I must say, Václav Havel came to see us when he came to England. It was at the time when he was allowed for the first time. It was 67 or 68, and he knew that my husband was in the Foreign Office, and he came to see him, and he asked him some questions about would he, my husband, consider returning home if the things changed. And my husband said yes, but it will take some time, because he doesn't think this Dubček era will last. But he said, I'm sorry, I can't give you more information, because obviously I'm tight in this office, so I couldn't tell you more, but I don't believe it is going to happen yet.
You lost your husband at the moment when everything was changing.
He died just 1 month before he died on the 17th of October on his birthday. It was just months before we could go home. It was one very sad thing for me. Well, we hoped very much that we'll be at that time something's going to happen, and we, of course, the moment 17th of November when it happened here, we immediately said the first thing, when we can go home, we go home. And I came here in January 90 immediately, asked, and the only thing, sad thing was I had my British passport and I had to go to Czechoslovak embassy at that time in London and ask for the Czech visa to be able to go home. And it was very sort of moment when I started really to cry, that I got suddenly I can go home and I got visas, Czech visas in my British passport to go home. I think we never thought we'll be able to come home. For us, it was Iron Curtain, and we thought, here we are, we have to make our life and don't look back, because we shouldn't think we can ever go back. It was unbelievable surprise that I could go home, and I'm very happy that I'm here, and I come here about 5 times in a year from England, but I live now with my family, with my daughter and with my grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and we are very happy family. But we never ever thought we'll be able in my life that we in our lives that we'll be able to come home.
Eva Jiránková, I want to thank you so much for taking time to talk to us.
It was a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.